Welcome to the Hardwater Fishing Show with your hosts, Jeff Byboth and Jason Killaby. We talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the second edition of our podcast. I can't believe you actually came back and listened. And then if you're actually a first-time listener, well, you're in for a treat. So we start every one of these podcasts with opening a nice adult beverage. And let's see if we get the nice sound on here again. Okay. My beverage of choice is an Old Style. Jeff, what are you having tonight?
Ooh, tonight we have the Coors Latte, otherwise known as the Coors Light. So here we go, and it is not the tall boy, but just the standard 12-ounce edition. Here we go.
Ah, you have a nice echo in that room.
Yeah.
That room in the basement of your mom, basement of your mom's house where you do this.
I am my own
basement. Don't be ashamed.
You.
Don't be ashamed. So you just got back.
I am in the basement.
So tonight we have a couple of different topics lined up for you tonight. Mainly we're going to talk about ice flashers and ice electronics, I guess, would be more of a general term. It's not as simple as it used to be, but we have some information for you. But we were both at deer camp this weekend. Jeff, did you shoot a deer?
I did shoot a deer. It was not a huge deer, but I got one. It was a doe. But, you know, in my lifetime, when I was 12, I shot a doe. When I was 40 years old, I shot a buck. And now, 2 years later, I shot another doe. So, you know, it's pretty cool.
So this is the third doe you've shot. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No. The second one I got an 8-point buck. It was a beast. It was pretty awesome.
That was a big deer.
So, This year I didn't get one, but two of my hunting party mates, they got a 10-point and an 8-point. So obviously we won't be discussing where exactly that happened.
That's good.
But it happened in Minnesota.
That's
so
good. You guys had
exciting.
A good time.
We had a good trip.
Hunted up by Duluth, up Two Harbors area, and we saw some does, and then that was it. And lots of wolf tracks, and that's probably a whole conversation for a whole different program, but a lot of wolves up there. That the deer, we had snow Friday, and then the wolf tracks, you know, the deer tracks and wolf tracks would start appearing, you know, and the wolf tracks outnumbered the deer tracks 2-1 for fresh
yeah.
tracks. So yeah, and I think they're probably better at hunting than I am.
Ooh.
But so they seem to win the day. So, but that's, you know, that's the circle of life, I guess, as the DNR is chosen. But, you know, I live in Iowa. I think I've mentioned that before. And so it's certainly different hunting in a state where you're not necessarily at the top of the food chain anymore. So it's kind of cool walking out in the dark. And Monday morning was my last sit, and I could hear the wolves howling from my stand at about 5:45 in the morning as I was waiting for the sun to come up. So kind of different.
Yeah, cool. That sounds awesome. I know. I had some good memories up there, too. I remember being up there 1 year, and I didn't see them, but, you know, I left my deer stand, and some moose showed up shortly after I had left my stand. But
was that at our place, or that was somewhere else? Oh, that's right. Dad was watching it flip its ears at you as you were walking away. And Jeff, so you're so aware that
yeah.
there's this 800-pound moose standing there, and you didn't even see it, so...
Yeah, well, I was reading my book, and that was really important.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So let's talk about ice flashers. Jeff, what kind do you have?
So I currently have a Hummingbird Ice 35. I got it. Oh, I probably had that thing for 4 or 5 years. That's kind of my current tool of choice. What do you have, Jason?
Well, I currently have the Ice 55, and I didn't always have that Hummingbird. I had a Markham for years. I had a LX3 TCI, And I loved it. However, the people I fished with, other than you, did not like it because it would nuke their Vexlars on interference.
Yeah, I remember you were the least popular guy on our ice fishing trip. They'd always stick you with me because my hummingbird wouldn't interfere with your machine. But those FL8s, oh man, whew, pretty rough.
The FL8s, yeah, they did not play well at all with that Markham. And in fact, if someone was catching more fish than me, I would just drill a hole about 10 feet away and fire that thing up and then screw them up. So it was kind of fun. I think they both have, Dave and Ollie've got the 28s, don't they?
Right.
You know, so in preparation for this, unlike our last show, I actually have done some additional reading on the subject of interference. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But so it used to be, right, that you'd have basically one choice. 20 years ago, you had one choice, really, for a decent ice fishing electronic. It was mainly Vexlar was the only show in town, the flasher. And Lawrence had the old green box and some of that stuff. But really, the Vexlar was the one that worked, right? And then Markham entered the market. You know, maybe, I don't know exactly when, but probably what, late 90s, early 2000s. And we're kind of slow to catch on. And it's weird because the vernacular, right? You still call, I call my hummingbird and my Markham a Vex because it's like, you know, all of a soda, a Coke kind of thing.
Yeah, no, totally. So do you remember that Markham? Oh gosh, this is like early Red Shed days, you know, like probably late 90s when, wasn't it a Markham Clearwater Classic or something like that? You borrowed from somebody and we brought up and we didn't have them.
Well, I think it was a Zircam, wasn't it? Or the, yeah, and there was a Markham
Zircam,
camera.
Yeah,
though.
That's
I think
what that
Markham
was.
Markham entered, yep. You know, their cameras caught on probably quicker than their flashers. Originally, at least just from the people that I associate with. And, but now, so then Hummingbird entered the market probably about the same time you bought that 35, right? Maybe a couple of years before that, where they started bringing them in, they brought in a lower price point, which Hummingbird's good at. I mean, that's what they do. A lot of their stuff's priced on that lower end stuff. Unlike Marka or Vex, it's not afraid to charge as much as they want for whatever they got.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember when I got that Ice 35, it was, you know, it was kind of taking a leap of faith, right? And actually, I remember it wasn't my first Ice 35, actually, I have. So I remember I got it, and I don't know, I got it on some deal or whatever, and it was probably $200 versus, you know, whatever, $275 that they were charging for the FL8s at the time. And I remember we went I brought it up there, right? Because the year before I had nothing. I mean, you know, everybody else had their finders and I just fished in my hole and hoped and prayed that something would come, you know, maybe they'd find a fish. But we were up on that lake. Remember that lake we drove to? It was by your cabin up there in Two Harbors. It wasn't really by your cabin. We drove down a road for like 45 minutes, and then we unloaded the sleds, and then we drove down some trail and through the woods.
Is that when we were trying to go at first to that Springhole Lake, and then Ollie's sled died, and then we drove by the guy with no eyebrows? Was that that trip?
Yeah, we're talking the no eyebrows trip. Yeah, when we saw on that trail. Yeah.
You know, we were going to tell a story. We'll tell that story tonight later at the end. We'll go more into details on the no eyebrows guy.
Yeah. So that was No Eyebrows Lake, right? So we get up in the morning, I remember, and we load up the sleds, drive. God, it had to be 45 minutes, don't you think?
It's only 12 miles as the crow flies, but there's no roads.
It was a long ways. And, yeah. So I remember we found a spot to park, which was not easy. You know, we tucked those sled trailers because we've got two trucks and four snowmobiles and shacks and blah, 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 right? You know what I mean? And we drive down that, remember that road? It wasn't even a snowmobile trail. It was like a, I don't know. I remember getting whacked by trees and branches and whatever. So we get out to that lake, and I've got my brand new Hummingbird Ice 35, feeling pretty good about myself. The screen's bigger. It's a pretty simple unit, but, you know, it's bigger than a FL8. I put it in the water. Nothing. Doesn't show a single thing.
I thought you were going to cry.
I would have, because, you know, I mean, this is like my first fish finder. I mean, you know, and I just got it, and I'm on the first day of our 4-day trip, and now I got nothing because it just doesn't work.
And you may have spent like a couple hours in the ride up explaining to us how it was better than the Vexlars.
Oh, I'm sure I did. And how it was cheaper and, you know, better because the screen's bigger and it has more features like Zoom that the FL8 didn't for cheaper. So, yeah. So that was kind of sad. But yeah, anyways, I mean, eventually I got a new one. I returned it after the trip was over.
And yeah, there's nothing worse than when you don't do a ton of fishing and then your equipment doesn't work. That's, you know, well, that was part of the auger conversation last week is, you know, all of us are busy. You got all these things going on, all this crap going on, and you finally get the wife to agree to let you buy something without all sorts of grief, and you buy it and then it doesn't work, and then you get home and you get the stink eye, and it's like, it's disaster. So it should be covered under warranty, you know, like you should get something some sort of extra compensation for the grief you have to go through when that kind of crap happens. But I digress again. So you found an idea in that rant. What was the idea?
Yeah, I think that's the next big idea, Jason. It's gear trip insurance.
Yeah, I like that. There you go.
Buy this thing. It's $300. You've taken your 4 days off a year. You get to go ice fishing. You drive up in the middle of nowhere, and it doesn't work. So what do? You buy your gear trip insurance. You get return, of course, return the equipment because it's brand new and you can get a new one. But then you get another $300 to, like, you know, for your next trip because now you've got your gear trip insurance because you that opportunity to use that gear was taken away.
You'll like never get it idea. Back. So I like your trip insurance. I think you should try to sell that. Give you something to do.
I'll do that. I'll be on ice fishing see for sale or trade
gear. I think you got to be licensed to start there.
I don't know
there.
How to sell insurance.
So Hummingbird's got the 35, the 45, and the 55. I've got the 55 now. And I would say I'm pretty happy with it. I think I like the one thing I like on the 55 is it has the digital readout for the depth. So it'll tell you 35 feet, 36 feet, 37 feet. Versus kind of eyeballing the flasher thingies and trying to decide, okay, how deep am I really? So it's a little more idiot-proof, which always helps.
As I say, I'm kind of bummed, though, because, you know, I do miss that readout. I mean, at first I thought the 55 was only just like 20 points better than the 35 because, you know, 20 plus 35 is 55. But I do kind of miss that, you know, that readout would be pretty cool.
The fourth color makes all the difference.
Yeah, I don't get
I don't even remember. It's been a year since I looked at the thing. Oh. It's got all sorts of colors. You know, the one thing, too, on all these machines, I would say all of them, is they have all significantly more features than 90% of people know what in the heck to do with. When I was doing some reading in preparation for tonight, which is odd, I know, slow day at work, it was amazing to me, you know, that 90% of the time, 90% of the people don't know how to use these machines within all the capabilities they have and understanding what it all means.
Yeah. I mean, I just usually turn my gun and hope it shows fish.
And then you still have to catch the fish, which is a problem for you generally too, but that's another story. We'll get into that later.
Yeah, I don't know. If we did, let's do some tallying on best fishermen.
So don't get off topic. So I kind of just did a quick search today because I'm amazed about all the new models out there. There's Garmin Striker, Lawrence Elite chirping thing. Markham's got about 8 different types. They got a new one out this year. I think it's new this year or last year, but the Markham LX9 digital with a camera. It's all one thing. Vexlar's got like the FL96 or something. No, I don't know what it is, but they've got a bunch of different Vexlar models out now. Hummingbird's really just got the 3. But then they've got the Helixes too, which came out what in 14, I think the Helix came out. And at first there were the, because I remember I was looking at the Helix when I was thinking about the Hummingbird, the 55, and I didn't go with the Helix because there was a lot of information.
Yeah, about absolutely. Yep.
Interference. And so here's the deal with interference. It's all about this KHS, so the Hertz.
Hold on, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. There's an interference.
That was a really bad joke, but we'll take it.
Go ahead.
Oh my God, that's terrible. How much longer do I got to do this with you? Can I get a new co-host? Go get your kid. I'll talk to
you. You're not going to find anybody else to talk to you about ice fishing at night.
A lot of these, like the Helixes run, and the Mark or the Vexlars run on 200 kHz. So the frequency is right is 200 kHz, whatever that means. And that's why things interfere, is they're running on the same same frequency. So the sonar works because it shoots a chirp or a sonar beam sound wave basically down to the bottom, and it bounces off stuff and it measures the rate of return. So if you have the same frequency in two machines side by side, then they're measuring each other's stuff and it screws up the timing, and you get those crazy circles that run around your machine and drive you crazy. And it makes false readings and drives everybody nuts and causes them to throw things. And a hard bottom makes it worse.
Yeah, or causes them to kick you out of their shack and go fish with Jeff with his Hummingbird.
Yeah, or you got to go sit on a bucket like 300 yards away. Not that I've ever had to do that more than 4 times. But so really long story short is there's different models of like these Helixes, if you're buying used or even like off a website that's selling kind of older model stuff. You just got to pay attention to the different models and then know who you're fishing with. If you have no friends and you never fish with anybody, buy whatever you want. It's going to work great. I looked at the price ranges, and these things run, you know, the Markham, cheap Markham, the low base Markham's like $280. You know, you can usually pick up a 35 Hummingbird for what, $250? And they run all the way up to, you know, $1,200, $1,300. Sure, yeah. So really you got to decide what you want to spend and then look around at the different models. And there's a lot of these guys that are using these Helixes on their boats and then on their ice fishing stuff. Do you know why that is?
Yeah, I was at Cabela's the other day and checking out, like you said, they got a lot of them there, right? I mean, that Hummingbird Helix 7, the new one, the ice one, it's pretty cool. I mean, it has the map.
Yeah, the mapping, you know, would save you one device, right? So if you're out using your handheld GPS or a tablet or whatever you want to use to get your favorite mapping, we could do a show on mapping. That'd be kind of fun. We should do one of those. But to use your favorite mapping software, you know, you can use that same thing you're using in the summer, you can use in the winter and save some money. And, you know, that's kind of nice. But GPS burns batteries. So if you're in a wilderness situation where you don't have electric every night, and we've done that, I don't know that that's the route you want to go.
Yeah, and I've heard of that too. Like, so like this Helix 7, I mean, I need a new fish finder for my boat anyway.
Things new.
It's circa 2000, you know, and I was looking at this Helix 7, Yeah, it's new. It is new. I call it my new boat, even though it was made in the year 2000.
I'm still running an Eagle Strata from 2000, like 1991.
But this Helix 7.
It looks like Pac-Man.
But they do their job, right? I mean, to tell you the depth. But yeah, I mean, if you bought this thing, it has maps. It has a like 50 different modes. Like, you know, you can look at like summer fishing bottom. You can look at a flasher. It has the maps included. It has a battery. You know, it looks kind of like a case. I mean, it looks pretty nice. But yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, and they have a 5 too. Like the one I was looking at was a 7, mm-hmm. but they have a 5-inch or a 7-inch. The same electronics and guts, I think. It's just 2 inches bigger. But you know, it's $650.
Yeah, you know, so like if I had to make a recommendation to somebody, you know, I talked a little bit about cost, but I think too, there's a level of technical ability you need to consider. Like if you just want to turn the thing on, adjust the knob, your gain knob, so you can see, you know, you can see your jig and you can see the little fish, you know, the little lines. I think you want to stick with really your Hummingbird Ice 30, what is it, 35, 45, or you want to stick with, you know, the mid-range Vexlars or your Markhams, your base two Markhams, because you can just turn them on, and if you got interference, you can just hit the IR button, and mostly the time it'll fix it. My reading and research tells me that the Helix, you can get rid of interference, but you need to have kind of a higher technical understanding of all these different settings to make it work. So if you just want idiot-proof stuff, I'd go with a flasher lower end. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, I think that too. I mean, you know, I mean, the modern ice fishing is about being fast, right? We're about being, let's drill 50 holes, let's go hop holes, let's go over here, go over there. And, you know, if every time I got to drill a hole, stick my finder down the hole, and then push 5 buttons, check it, and then move on, that's a lot slower than, like, you know, just sticking my basic flasher down the hole and going, yep, no fish, or yep, 15 feet, or, you know, whatever you're looking for. So, yeah, I mean, fancier isn't always better.
I do think there's some utility in using the same things, you know, throughout the summer and in the winter. I mean, I think that's a good value. So, I've got to look at a new fish finder for my boat, too. And so, you know, as I do that, I may look at a unit that could double, simply in case another meth head breaks into my garage and steals my fish finder again, like what happened last time. It's just to give me a backup. And I'll keep them in different places. So, because that happens in this day and age. Your stuff disappears or it breaks or it flies out of a boat or out of a snowmobile. And there you go.
Are you sure that somebody took it, or was it maybe one of your fishing buddies that was tired of sitting next to you in there, Markham, with their
FOI? Well, there is that possibility.
Another season.
but then if you did steal my Markham, I would also like my drill and my saws and my battery charger and whatever else I haven't figured out that was stolen yet back would be nice. It could be. It could have been
maybe
cover.
Maybe that was just cover. You know,
I'm not impressed, I'll tell you that. So yeah, that's the story. I think that,
right,
you know, there's a ton of options. It's amazing how many more options there are out there now. And I just think electronics have come a long way in processing and everything else. So
yeah, they're awesome. And I think they're changing all the time. I mean, getting better and better every year. Even, you know, last year is better than this year. And, you know, versus we had the FL8 for 15 years and it was just the same thing.
Yeah, and when you fish with one of these newer machines and you go back and look at an FL8, it's really kind of like, you know, looking at an old Atari versus looking at some sort of new graphics, you know, on a new video game. It's so much more crisp and defined in these newer units. But that's not to say the old FL8, it'll show you your jig, it'll show you a fish. You know, and really, yeah, that's what you need.
That's all you need.
So I guess we could tell the story about the guy with no eyebrows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, is it that time? Have we exhausted our... I feel like we could talk about these forever. I mean, there's other styles that you could talk about, too, but...
Well, like what? Like, what would you talk about if you had more time?
Well...
Oh, we should mention the bobber.
The bobber?
So, there's this thing that keeps popping up on my Facebook feed, right? It's like the bobber, the sonar bobber thing, and they're trying to sell it as, you know, this real quick thing that you drill the hole and you put the bobber, this round bobber thing down, and it links to your phone via Bluetooth. And they also have it for summer fishing where you can cast it out and do whatever. But I don't know about it for summer fishing, but for the winter, it's hard to, in my opinion, the flaw is it's hard to keep a cell phone operating, an iPhone operating at below 32 degrees. They want to shut off.
Well, I've found that sometimes when you hold your cell phone over the hole, it sometimes goes down the hole.
It does. So yeah, that's bad.
So, you know, because you know when you're ice fishing, somehow everything seems to find its way to that hole, no matter how much you try to keep it away. So.
Well, the other thing is you have to take off. You know, there are gloves that have touchscreen capabilities, but for the most part, your really warm winter gloves, they don't have touchscreen capabilities. So you're going to have to operate this thing by taking your mittens off. And if it's super cold out, no. And your battery, what, lasts 10 minutes on a cell phone when it's cold? So, and you need that for watching Seinfeld, right?
So the other style that, exactly. When you're watching Seinfeld, that's what I was watching. The other one that we didn't talk about was that Showdown. I was pretty close to buying a Showdown before I bought my Hummingbird.
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. You know, yep, that's that vertical case on the Showdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of a vertical.
And some people
LCD.
Love those. I've talked to people that swear by them. You know, and
yeah,
I think that kind of goes into, you know, it fits a price point again. I don't think they're overly expensive, and at the time they came out, I don't think Hummingbird had developed the ice ones weren't on the market yet. When that Showdown came out, and that sucker had a lot more features compared to the Vexlars for the money, for the price point, you know, that mid, what, three, I think they're like under $300, right around $300.
Yeah, they are. And the other advantage that I saw people using them for is they would, you know, I mean, when you, and I haven't gotten to a lot of different mounts and stuff, but you know, when you're fishing all day, I saw people strapping, because they're small, right? They're kind of tall and skinny. And, you know, I saw people using like Velcro and like attaching them to their pant leg or to their arm or, you know, putting them up high because they're super lightweight. Or even hole hopping, you know, instead of dragging that big thing, you can kind of just strap that thing on your arm and drop the transducer down the hole and just be hole hopping really fast. So I think they have a place even at a price point. I've always kind of wanted to try one, but someday maybe.
We could just give you that, Velcro that, send you off with an auger and drink some beer while you find the fish.
Yeah, like it's kind of like I almost want to find a used one that I could just justify to try out, because I mean, it could be cool with just a lightweight auger and that and a fishing pole.
Well, maybe Markham will hear this podcast and they'll send you one to try.
Yeah, I'm willing to take any ice fishing gear that any manufacturer wants me to sell me. I will make sure.
How about an automatic jig?
I will bring it
up
out there. I mean, it's going to happen. Well, I don't know, because I don't
those
think
things
I could
terrible.
Recommend that thing. So.
Okay, so no eyebrows guy. I really want to tell this story. This is one of the best. It is the one of our classic adventures. So this was on the same lake that Jeff's Hummingbird died, and he almost did go back with this fellow, I think, just to cry and on his shoulder. But so... We're on this trail, and there's these cabins, I guess, off of this trail that probably looks like a road in the summer, but it was such a heavy snow year. All the willows and spruce and all the little trees were all over the trail. So we had sent two guys ahead before we drug all our shacks down. So it was me. Was it you or was it Dave? Who was with me? Was it you? I can't. Okay, so it's me and Sean then.
No, I was with
Dave.
So
we're sitting there in the middle of the woods, nobody around. No tracks, no car tracks, no snowmobile tracks. We're just sitting there talking, waiting for these two yahoos to come back. And all of a sudden, we look to our left, and there's a guy standing there. We're like, where'd you come from? And he just appeared in the middle of the woods.
We are miles from anything. The only place, way to get here is snowmobile. I mean, there's nothing around. It's
yeah, but there was some cabins down there in the summer, but there was no evidence anybody was up. There was no tracks, no snowmobiles, no sound. And we looked to the left, and there's a guy. He just kind of showed up, and it was really quiet and snowy, so I think he kind of snuck up on us. And he had cover, like blue overalls on, and a shirt, and no hat, and his gloves. And he was kind of a portly-looking fellow, and he had no eyebrows. They were gone. He had hair, but no eyebrows. And he's like...
And remember his clothes, like he didn't have enough clothes. It was below zero.
And
he didn't have enough clothes on. And the clothes he did have on, like his overalls had holes in them.
They were.
Like they were like burnt up almost.
And so we're like, hello? He's like, hi. And he was very friendly. He's like, I haven't seen anybody in a week and a half. And we're like, how long you been here? He goes, oh, a couple of weeks. I was kind of tired of the family, so I thought I'd come out here for a while. Do you guys want to come to my cabin and have something to drink? And we're like, no, we're good. It'd really be nice to have company. And we're like, we're waiting for people. We're expected somewhere. They'll be back for us. Because we only had two sleds, right? We were riding double. So we were just standing there, you know, basically at the end of this guy's lane. And I'm not really a skittish person, but I was a little skittish, and I didn't have a good feeling about this. I felt like if we had indeed joined him for a beverage, we probably would have ended up hanging upside down, begging for mercy at some point.
Certainly this podcast never would have came up because, I mean, that was like 10 years ago, and I mean, we just wouldn't be here.
No one would have known. We would be in a cabin somewhere squealing for mercy, no doubt. Yeah, it was uncomfortable. And so, you know, you always got to be safe, boys and girls, in the Northwoods, because there are strange things out there that you never know. And I'm sure maybe he was a perfectly nice fellow, and he was tired of the family, and he just wanted to have a beer or a beverage and tie somebody up and hang him from his ceiling. And other than that, he intended no harm. But, you know, you just shouldn't accept beverages from strangers in the woods. Not a good plan.
Well, and you know, if I would have bought my gear trip insurance, I wouldn't have been able to collect, because I never would have returned from our trip to collect that gear trip insurance.
I think he would have liked you the best. I'm just saying. I know. So anyway, that's the story. That's the story of the day. And other than that, I don't think I've got anything else that's not just rambling. So. What's our topic next week, Jeff?
So I think next time we're going to be talking about the other part of the big three, right? You need a drill hole, probably the pretty important thing. Kind of important to be able to put something down the hole to see what kind of fish are down there. Third thing is, you know, it gets cold outside. I mean, I want a shack to keep me warm. I mean, you know, hole hopping's fine when it's 30 degrees outside, but when it's zero... eventually, you need to crawl into your shack. So I think next week we'll be talking portable shacks.
Portable shacks. That sounds great. I will do a little bit of research. Now, this I know a little bit more about without having to do some research on. But that sounds great. Wonderful. Well, and I'm out of beer, so it's time to go.
All right.
Have a good night.
Till next time.